am the man!
A short time earlier, Chief Walks Like a Bear had ridden into the camp where Laura, Mallory, Ezra Flagg, and Flagg's engine wife were spending the night. The chief had 8 warriors with him, the only survivors from a war party that had started out more than 6 times that size. Flagg and Walks Like a Bear had spoken for several minutes in rapid, heated Blackfoot. Then a grim-faced Flagg had turned to the Mallorys.
They weren't able to take the stockade. Fact is, the rest of the war party was wiped out. Bear says that the Ghost Killer walked among them.
What the bloody hell is the Ghost Killer?
That's one of their names for Preacher.
Over the next few minutes, Flagg explained to them everything Walks Like a Bear told him, from Preacher's seemingly magical ability to make fire explode in the midst of a war party, to the in-the-nick-of-time appearance of the savage dog and horse that helped save him.
According to Walks Like a Bear, they ain't even real animals. They're spirit animals. They're bad medicine, like Preacher himself. He wishes he'd never heard of you folks, even though you brought him all those new guns. Most of his young warriors are dead now. And he ain't too happy with me for bringing you to him.
That had made Laura and Mallory nervous. Walks Like a Bear might want revenge for all the men he had lost. And the 2 British agents and the renegade American were the handiest targets for the chief's anger. Flagg had assured them, though, that Walks Like a Bear wouldn't kill them.
If you can get more rifles, then Bear will probably be willing to make another deal once he cools off. He's really more interested in killing Preacher than anything else.
I thought I had killed him, for God's sake. I shot the man in the head. What more could I have done to kill him?
From everything I heard about him, Preacher's got a habit of dodging the Reaper. He must have just grazed him. Even a head wound that ain't too bad will bleed like a man's dying.
Well then, the first thing we have to do when we put the next plan into operation is to make sure that Preacher is dead.
Yeah, easier said than done. How about them rifles? You never said whether or not you can get more of them.
Of course we can. We have the wealth and power of the British government behind us. This is just a temporary obstacle in our path. All we need to do is to get back to St. Louis.
Yeah, that's a long way. Plenty could go wrong betwixt here and there.
That's true. Do you think that the chief and his men would be willing to escort us part of the way?
You got the balls of a brass monkey, don't you, Mallory? A chief loses 50 warriors following your plan, and you want him to help you some more?
The Blackfoot have been fighting the Americans for more than 20 years. I'm sure the warriors who were lost tonight aren't the first losses they've suffered. And it's hardly the fault of Laura or myself that Preacher showed up out of nowhere to warn the settlers.
Well, I'll ask him. He can't do any worse than say no. Well, actually, I reckon he can. He can have all of us scalped, but I don't think he will.
Mallory swallowed hard and tried to look reassuringly at Laura while Flagg spoke to Chief Walks Like a Bear. The chief glowered at the 2 British agents and spat out a reply. Mallory didn't find that reaction encouraging in the least. After a few minutes more of discussion, however, the chief finally gave Flagg a curt nod.
He says he'll do it. He'll take you to the edge of the territory the Blackfoot claims their hunting grounds. After that, though, you're on your own.
Very well. We'll take whatever aid we can get. What about you, Flagg? Will you go with us?
I reckon I'll get paid for my services.
Cooperate with us, help us accomplish our goals, and I can assure you that you'll be a very rich man.
And that's what I wanted to hear.
Colin Fairfax heard rifles and pistols being cocked as he stumbled into the clearing. It had taken him most of the night to reach the place where his men had been camped before. He and Sherwood had agreed that they would return here after leaving the valley and making Preacher think they were on their way back to St. Louis. This was the spot where Preacher had stolen into the camp during the middle of the night and killed 6 men. Fairfax was convinced that Preacher wouldn't believe the rest of the group would ever return here. The fire had burned down to embers and most of the men were asleep, but Sherwood had been smart enough to post guards. It was too dark for him to see very well, but they knew someone had just walked up to camp.
Who the hell's there?
The voice woke other men and caused them to roll out of their blankets and grab for their guns.
It's only me.
Boss, is that you?
I just said it was, didn't I?
Put those guns down. It's
Just the boss.
Sherwood came forward.
You got the Heart Woman with you?
Our plans have changed. I wasn't able to kidnap the woman because Indians attacked the settlement while I was there.
Indians?
I heard someone say it was a Blackfoot war party, but I don't know for sure about that.
How'd you get away?
By the skin of my teeth.
What happened to the settlers? Did the Redskins wipe them out?
No. I stayed close enough to watch what happened before I started back here. I'm sure the savages killed quite a few of the settlers, but in the end, the attackers were routed. And the man who made that possible was Preacher.
I thought Preacher was supposed to be off somewhere checking his traps.
That's what we assumed he would do. Somehow he found out about the war party on its way to attack the village and got there first to warn the settlers. I don't see how he does the things he does. It shouldn't be possible for a man to always be in the right place at the right time. I had a bead on him again.
Let me guess. He moved just as you pulled the trigger.
Fairfax's head went up and down in a slow nod.
Well, what do we do now? Are you still determined to kill him, or is it time to give up?
I'll never give up. Not until Preacher's dead. We'll pick up his trail at the settlement somehow. Maybe we can still get our hands on Mrs. Heart and use her as bait in the trap. Somehow, we'll find a way.
Fact was, doubt gnawed at the edges of Fairfax's mind. After everything that had happened, he couldn't help but wonder if it was even possible to kill Preacher. Maybe the man was immortal. Now that idea was insane, of course, and Fairfax knew it. But when he thought about all the times he'd had Preacher in his sights only to have the mountain man escape, well, it was enough to make a man despair. But not Fairfax, because Fairfax had his hate to keep him going. Pain in Preacher's arm, head, and knee kept him from sleeping well that night. He would have been even more restless if not for several long swallows from the tin cup full of whiskey that he put away. When he woke up in the morning, his headache had subsided to a dull throbbing, as had the pain in his knee. And the way his arm was strapped down, he couldn't move it enough to make it hurt very much. He was able to sit up on his own. Preacher pushed the blanket off him, then swung his legs off the bunk and started to stand up. The sudden dizziness that hit him almost knocked him back down. He put his good hand on the bed to brace himself and managed not to fall.
Oh, shit.
In doing so, though, he bumped the little table beside the bed.
Preacher! You're not supposed to be up. You lie back down right now.
Preacher became uncomfortably aware that he wore only the bottom half of a pair of long underwear, although all the bandages wrapped around his arms and torso covered him up almost as much as if he were wearing clothes.
Deborah, you skedaddle on out of here whilst I find my buckskins to put them on. Ain't fitting for you to be in here like this.
Oh, poop! I'm not going to see anything I haven't seen before. Who do you think found all your wounds and cleaned them last night?
Well, maybe so, but I'd still feel a heap better with my buckskins on.
Well, you can't have them for a while. One of the Indian women who lives here in the settlement is cleaning and mending them. She'll bring them back here when she's finished with them. It may be a few days.
Well, I can't wait that long. Reckon I'll have to come up with something else to wear.
Why can't you wait that long? You're not going anywhere.
No offense, ma'am, but that's where you are wrong. I'll be riding down as soon as I've had something to eat and gathered some supplies. Longer I wait to take up the trail of them Blackfoot that stole Miss Laura, the better chance I'll have of getting away. I'd appreciate it if you'd pass the word to any of the fellows who want to go with me that I'll be leaving in half an hour or so.
Half an hour? Oh!
Deborah quickly stormed out of the room.
Corliss! Come here and talk some sense into Preacher right now!
By the time Corliss came into the room a few minutes later, Preacher had gone through Jerome's clothes and given up on finding any that might fit him. He didn't even try them on because he knew he'd rip out the seams.
Deborah tells me you've lost your mind.
Yeah, well, she's a good woman and she means well, but she don't understand. Time's a-wasting.
You really did lose quite a bit of blood, Preacher.
I'll make more.
And riding a horse is going to hurt like hell with that broken arm.
I've hurt before. It'd be worse if it was my leg that was broke. Anyway, Uncle Dan's got it splinted good, and he wrapped it up nice and tight, so I don't reckon I can hurt it any more than it's already hurt.
You can't use a rifle with only one hand.
I can fire a pistol just fine, though. And I can use a rifle if I got something to rest the barrel on.
You're not going to let anyone talk you out of this, are you? No matter how crazy it is?
Hell no.
All right, wait here. I think some of my clothes might fit you. I'm not quite as broad through the shoulders as you, though, so they may be a tight fit.
Well, I reckon they'll do.
Corliss found a pair of whipcord trousers that fit Preacher fairly well. The shirt was a bit more of a problem because of the broken arm, but eventually they got one on him by slitting the sleeve of the left arm and then binding it into place. Preacher's boots were all right, and his rifle, pistols, knife, and tomahawk had been brought into the trading post. He had blown up his powder horn along with the others he had used against the Blackfoot, but the Heart had others, along with kegs of powder and shot. Jerome came into the room and saw the Preacher was dressed.
You were supposed to talk him out of it, Corliss!
Yeah, well, you tried to talk sense to Preacher. No offense, Preacher.
None taken. I've been called loco plenty of times in my life.
I wasn't saying... Well, yes, I suppose I was.
You need to rest, Preacher. You're in no shape to go chasing off after the Blackfoot, no matter who they've taken prisoner.
Preacher managed to cinch a belt around his waist.
I don't reckon Miss Mallory and her brother would agree with you.
That's another thing. Are you sure you saw Clyde Mallory with them? I don't understand that at all.
Well, light wasn't good, and I'd just been shot in the head. But I'm pretty damn sure that was Clyde I saw. Miss Laura was riding behind him on the same horse, and there was half a dozen Blackfoot around him. Might have been another man, too. Ain't sure about that. Like I said, the light wasn't too good.
And you'd been shot in the head?
Yeah, that too.
If you're bound and determined to do this, you'll need a hat, too. Let me go and find one for you.
Jerome believes in being dressed properly for any occasion, even chasing Indians.
Preacher wasn't limping too much when he emerged from the room a few minutes later. He found about a dozen men waiting for him in the trading post's big front room. He recognized Pete Sanderson, Sanderson's Uncle Dan, Stubby Little Dennison, and the hulking Van Gort brothers among them. Several of the men had blood-stained bandages tied around their arms, legs, or heads, but they seemed to be in fairly good shape. Uncle Dan stepped forward.
We're going with you, Preacher. We want to help you settle the score with them damn Redskins.
Now, the reason I'm going after the Blackfoot is to rescue Miss Laura and her brother. Revenge ain't the main thing I'm after.
Yeah, but it'll be a heap easier to help the lady if all them savages are dead.
Well, you got a point there. I'll be glad to have you boys with me, but we'll be riding hard and fast, and there's liable to be plenty of blood spilled before we're done.
Long as it's Blackfoot blood, we're fine with that. Our horses are saddled and waiting outside. We're ready to ride whenever you are, Preacher.
You got plenty of supplies. No telling how long we'll be on the trail.
Don't worry about that. You know we can live off the land if we have to.
Speaking of food, if we can't talk you into going back to bed and resting like you should, at least you can have a good meal before you leave. I have flapjacks and bacon and plenty of hot coffee.
I feel better just hearing about it, Miss Deborah. I expect I'll feel a whole new man once I've had a mess of that grub.
You're all welcome to eat. I'll get started cooking some more.
The big meal took longer than Preacher expected, stretching out to an hour, so it was later than he had hoped it would be when the men trooped out of the trading post to mount up. Even so, the sun wasn't very high in the sky yet. The Blackfoot had only about a 12-hour start. That was quite a bit of time to make up, but Preacher was confident that he and his companions could do it. Corliss came up to Preacher.
I wish I was going with you.
The folks here in the settlement are going to need leaders while they're burying their loved ones and getting started on rebuilding their homes. That's you and Jerome. There wouldn't even be a settlement here without you two.
There wouldn't be a settlement here without you, Preacher. I know that a man like you doesn't ever stay put for very long, but if there's any place you'd ever call home, we'd be honored if it was here.
That's right. You know the settlement doesn't have a name yet. We'd be honored if you'd let us call it Preacherville.
Or West Preacherburg.
Oh, I reckon I appreciate the sentiment, fellas, but I'd be mighty pleased if you'd sort of forget about that idea.
Oh, you sure? We really don't mind.
Oh, boy, yeah, I'm sure.
Deborah insisted on giving Preacher a hug.
Be careful. If you jostle that arm around, it won't set properly. And you can't afford to open up any of those wounds and lose any more blood.
I'll be careful. As much as I can, anyway.
That's what I was afraid you'd say. Come back to us safely, you hear?
Yes, ma'am.
The men lifted their hands in farewell and heeled their horses in motion. preacher gritted his teeth against the twinges of pain that went through his broken arm with every stride that horse took. And that big stallion had a smooth gait. Preacher had to think about what a rough ride would feel like. It was easy enough to pick up the trail near the burned-out hulk of Laura's cabin. Blackfoot and the prisoners hadn't been trying to hide their tracks. Pete Sanderson and Uncle Dan rode beside him with the other men spread out behind him.
I heard that Englisher who sided with you in that ruckus we had was one of the prisoners. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm convinced I saw him with Miss Laura. I know he was supposed to have left with those wagons of his, but I saw what I saw.
Mighty strange, if you ask me.
Well, I reckon when we catch up with him, we can ask Mallory what he's doing back in this part of the country.
The other trappers let the subject drop after that. Something else odd cropped up. The sign indicated that the group of riders they were following split up, with most of them turning toward the settlement, and two sets of tracks going on north up the valley.
What the hell? That bunch headed back to the fight, but those two went on.
Those are shod hooves. Looks like the Blackfoot let the prisoners go.
Why in the blazes would they do that? And if these folks weren't captives anymore, why didn't they come back to the settlement?
Well, maybe they didn't think there was a settlement to go back to. I mean, the cabins were on fire, the Blackfoot were laying siege to the stockade. They may have figured that their best chance to survive was just to keep on going.
But that means them two Englishers are out there somewhere in the wilderness on their own. They're liable to get in a heap of trouble.
And that's why we're going to follow them anyway. They may still need our help.
Some of these fellas only came along so they could kill Blackfoot and settle the score for what happened back at the settlement. They might not like it if they don't get the chance.
I got a feeling that before all this is over, they'll get their chance.
Fairfax called a halt around midday when the group was about a mile from the settlement. They dismounted, and he motioned his second in command over to him.
He'll go in and see if Preacher is there.
Why me?
Because I was there last night, and it's possible someone might recognize me.
What's wrong with that?
I had to kill a man while I was there. I don't think anyone saw me, but I don't want to take that chance.
You didn't say anything about that.
The bastard saw me take a shot at Preacher.
And miss.
I tried to convince him that it was an honest mistake, that I mistook Preacher for an Indian in the bad light, but he wouldn't accept that explanation. Damn fool tried to raise a commotion about it.
So what did you do? Plant a knife in his belly?
Exactly.
Well, what am I supposed to do?
Like I said, find out if Preacher is there. If he's not, try to find out where he's gone.
He might be dead. The Redskins could have killed him.
I'll believe that when I see it.
Maybe the Red Devils wiped out the whole settlement.
Then what's that smoke?
Some of the cabins still burning.
It wouldn't look like that. That's chimney smoke. The settlement survived no matter how much damage the Indians may have done. Now we're wasting enough time.
I'm going.
Sherwood propped his flintlock on his shoulder and started off toward the settlement, taking long strides through the calf-high grass. He glanced back and saw Fairfax watching him depart on the mission. A short time later, Sherwood came in sight of the settlement. Black smudges in the grass and piles of charred rubble marked where several of the cabins had been. The engines must have torched them. Most of the cabins were still standing, though, and so was the stockade. The trading post and the other buildings inside the log walls appeared to be intact, too. Sherwood could see them through the open gates. As he approached, he noticed several guards posted on the parapet inside the wall. One of them turned.
We got a man approaching!
After the engine attacked the night before, those folks were plenty nervous. A few minutes later, a party of half a dozen grim-faced men walked out through the gates to meet Sherwood. All of them carried rifles and watched him closely, even though he was obviously a white man, not a redskin. Sherwood put on a friendly smile and raised a hand in greeting.
Howdy. Looks like you folks had some trouble here.
A well-built, dark-haired man wearing store-bought clothes nodded.
The Blackfoot paid us a visit last night.
I'm sorry to hear that. I reckon I'm just lucky I didn't get here a day earlier, eh?
I guess you could look at it that way. What are you doing here today?
Why, I come to try my luck at fur trapping here in the mountains. Anything wrong with that?
No, of course not. When you get right down to it, the fur trade is why all of us are here, I suppose. I'm Corliss Hart. My cousin and I own the trading post.
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Hart. Sherwood's my name.
If you're a fur trapper, where's your outfit? Don't you even have a pack horse?
Back yonder a couple miles. I'm just out scouting for a bigger bunch.
How big?
Oh, there's 7 or 8 of us.
We'll be glad to have you. The settlement lost some men during the fight last night, and some others have gone off chasing the Redskins who raided us.
Really? Seems to me you'd like to stay as far away from those savages as possible.
They took some prisoners. Our men want to try and get them back.
Captives, huh? That's a damn shame. Reckon I could get a drink before I head back to my bunch and bring them on in?
Sure. We've got plenty of whiskey.
Corliss motioned for Sherwood to follow him and his companions into the stockade. Sherwood trooped inside with the others, who were definitely friendly and welcoming now that they thought he would be bringing more fighting men to the settlement. They were clearly shaken by the engine raid and the toll that it had taken. Corliss Hart took Sherwood to the trading post and led him inside the cavernous building. The sun had grown a little warmer as it reached its zenith, so Sherwood was glad to step inside the cooler interior. He was even happier a moment later when he saw the woman standing behind the counter at the back of the room. Dark-haired like her husband and with a beautiful smile on her face, Deborah Hart was a welcome sight. Corliss pointed to a table in the corner.
Sit down. I'll bring you a jug.
Much obliged.
Sherwood took a seat on a barrel chair and propped his rifle in the corner beside him. Corliss fetched a jug from behind the counter and brought it over to him.
If you're hungry, there's food. It's just salt jowl and beans and biscuits, but it's filling.
Sounds mighty good to me. Again, I'm obliged.
And there'll be a pot of stew for supper, too, if you're still here.
Sherwood took a couple of swigs from the jug. A thin, fox-faced gent brought a plate of food and set it down on the table in front of him.
I'm Jerome Hart. My cousin and I run this trading post.
Mighty glad to meet you, Mr. Hart. Name's Sherwood.
Jerome pulled up a chair and sat down.
I suppose my cousin Corliss told you about the trouble we had last night.
He mentioned it. Looks like you lost some cabins. I hope not too many folks were hurt.
Unfortunately, we had numerous casualties. And at least 2 people were taken prisoner by the savages.
But some of the men went after them, right? I think that's what your cousin said.
Indeed, they did.
You reckon they'll get the captives back?
I don't know. But at least they'll have a good chance. Preacher is leading the rescue party.
Preacher? You folks have got a minister here?
No, that's what the man is called, Preacher. His real name is Arthur, but no one calls him that.
Who's he?
One of the fur trappers. He's been out here in the mountains longer than almost anyone else. He certainly knows his way around as well or better than anyone, including the Indians. Most of them are afraid of him. I've heard that some of them consider him an evil spirit rather than a flesh-and-blood man.
Sounds to me like he's the right man for the job.
Well, there's no one better at following a trail, and no one more dangerous in a fight. Unfortunately, Preacher's not at the top of his strength right now.
He's not?
No, he was injured in the fighting last night. He has a broken arm, not to mention numerous other injuries that are less serious.
A broken arm? How can a man chase down a bunch of savages with a busted wing?
Oh, that's Preacher for you. He doesn't let anything stop him.
Well, it's too bad my friends and I didn't get here sooner. We could have gone along with the rescue party. Which way did they go anyway?
I believe they were headed northeast when they left the settlement. But of course, there's no way of knowing where the trail led them from here.
Well, I wish him luck. I hope they bring back the folks you lost, safe and sound.
With Preacher on the trail, I think there's a good chance of it.
Ezra Flagg was a closed-mouthed man. Clyde Mallory had tried several times during the day to engage him in conversation, but most of Flagg's answers had been curt. Sometimes he just grunted in response to Mallory's questions. Laura was bored. She regarded Flagg's attitude as something of a challenge. She was riding one of the Blackfoot ponies, rather than riding double with her brother. She had pulled her skirt up, tucked the excess material back between her legs, and now rode astride the pony's blanket-draped back. As she brought her mount alongside Flagg's, she saw him glance over at her bare calves and knees.
I'm glad you're going to St. Louis with us, Mr. Flagg. How long has it been since you last visited civilization?
Not long enough.
You don't care for cities?
Well, I don't care for the folks who live there, and they don't care for me.
I take it your last trip east was unpleasant?
Yeah, you could call it that. No offense, ma'am, but what business is it of yours?
None at all. Women are like cats, though. We are curious about things.
Well, I went back a few years ago, all the way back to Ohio, to the farm where I was raised.
Wasn't your family glad to see you?
They were, I reckon. But there was a gal.
Ah, let me guess. She promised to wait for you, but she didn't remain faithful?
No, that ain't it. She waited for me, all right. I figured we'd get hitched and that I'd see her whenever I came back home when I wasn't trapping. Then she asked if I'd been faithful to her.
Surely you didn't tell her about... What is her name? Willow?
Weeping Willow. And yeah, I told that gal back home. I've never been one for lying. Tell folks the truth straight out, that's me. I said, sure, I've been faithful, if you don't count Injun gals, which I didn't.
But your sweetheart didn't see things that way.
No, she got all upset, told me to get the hell out and never come back. Called me a filthy squaw man. I don't know where she heard that term, but she picked it up somewhere. So I figured I'd come back here to the mountains where folks don't get so upset about things that don't matter. Only that gal's brother caught up to me before I rode out. Said he was gonna give me a thrashing for hurting his sister.
So there was a fight?
You couldn't hardly call it that. He hit me and I hit him back. And he went over backwards and hit his head on a log.
He was badly hurt?
Yeah, I stove his skull right in. I didn't mean to kill him, but he wasn't any less dead because of that. I lit out for the tall and uncut. I reckon I'm wanted for murder back in Ohio. Not that I give a damn. I don't figure on ever going back.
That sweetheart of yours was a simpering fool. And I'll tell you something else, Mr. Flagg. She was probably no more faithful to you while you were gone than you were to her.
But she said...
She lied to you. I don't know that for certain, of course, but I feel sure of it. The self-righteous, those who are so quick to judge others, are usually the wickedest of all.
Well, could be that you're right. It don't matter now, though. Ain't no going back.
There never is.
Chief Walks Like a Bear and the surviving members of the war party were still with Laura, Mallory, Flagg, and Weepin' Willa when they made camp that evening. The Indians built a small fire and heated some food, but they did not offer to share it with the whites. That left Flagg to make another fire, and then Willa fried some bacon from a slab she took out of her saddlebag. She made some sort of flat fried bread to go with the bacon. She walked over to where Laura sat on a log and offered her several strips of bacon piled on a piece of bread. Laura smiled, reached up, and took the food.
Thank you, Willow.
Willow's face never changed expression, and she made no reply.
You're wasting your time.
What did you say, Mr. Flagg?
I said you're wasting your time talking to Willa. She won't talk to you.
Does she not speak English?
I don't know. I never asked her.
Perhaps something is wrong with her hearing. She might be deaf.
She ain't deaf. I tell her to do something, she does it. I know she hears me, but she never talks to me either. Ain't said a single word since she's been with me.
But that's terrible.
Oh, it has its benefits. I don't have to put up with a lot of useless jabbering.
Perhaps she has some sort of physical disability that prevents her from talking.
Maybe so. I never took the time to check.
Laura didn't attempt to talk to Willow anymore, and she ignored Flagg. The food was greasy and not very good, but it filled the gnawing ache in Laura's belly, and after a while she rolled up her blankets beside the log and went to sleep. She was not the pampered beauty she appeared to be. This wasn't the first time in her life she had slept on the ground. This grassy hillside, for all its primitiveness, was better than a squalid London alley. Laura slept fairly soundly, confident that if any trouble tried to creep up on them during the night, the Indians would be aware of it and would take steps to deal with it. When trouble came, though, it was from within, not without. Laura woke up with someone's hot breath in her face and a hand groping roughly at her breast. She tried to jerk away, but the weight of a man's body pinned her to the ground. She opened her mouth to scream. The hand that had been pawing at her clamped over her mouth instead, silencing her.
Just be quiet, ma'am. You just be still and there won't be no trouble. You might even enjoy it.
Despite the warning he had just given her, she began to struggle, twisting her head back and forth and pushing at him. The The fingers of the hand over her mouth pressed harder and more painfully into her cheeks.
Damn it, woman! You want that brother yours to die? The chief and his men will do whatever I tell them. And if you give me trouble, I'll tell them to kill Clyde. Then you'll be mine from now on.
That made Laura's struggle cease, at least momentarily. She didn't doubt that Flag meant exactly what he said, but he hadn't thought it through yet. If Clyde was dead, Flag would never get the rest of the money that had been promised to him. She had to make him understand that. She couldn't do it with his filthy hand pressed over her mouth. She nodded, hoping he would think she was agreeing with what he wanted.
You ain't gonna fight?
Laura shook her head.
Now you're showing some sense. And it ain't gonna be too bad for you. I promise. Don't you scream now.
Flag lifted his hand.
Please don't do this, Mr. Flag. It's not right. You have a woman.
A squaw? A filthy, stinking squaw? You know how long it's been since I've been with a white woman?
You may think that Weeping Willow has no feelings because she doesn't talk, but I assure you she does.
Hush up now. I don't want a lot of jabber from you either. Just move your legs, I might.
Turns out Laura was not a damsel in distress. She let Flag feel the point of the knife she had gone to sleep clutching in her hand. She let him feel it at his most sensitive spot, too, pressing the blade to the front of his buckskin trousers.
This knife is sharp enough to go through buckskin, Mr. Flag. And it will go right through what's underneath the buckskin, too.
You bitch. I'll break your neck.
And I'll be dead. But you'll never be a man again. Think about it, Mr. Flag. Is it truly worth the cost?
What do you want? You want me to leave you alone?
Exactly. Go back to your own blankets, and we won't speak of this again.
You won't tell your brother.
I can take care of myself. I don't always need Clyde to save me, you know.
You're making a mistake.
I'm confident that I'm not. Well?
All right, damn it.
Get off me, now!
Flag pushed himself up and rolled off of her at the same time.
You don't have to be so blasted persnickety. I wasn't gonna hurt you. I just wanted to have a little fun.
I choose when and where I have my fun, Mr. Flag. You'll do well to remember that.
Yeah, I reckon I will. Where'd you get that knife? What do? Sleep with it in your hand?
That's exactly what I do. You should remember that, too.
Flag stood up and moved around to the other side of the embers that remained from the campfire. He glanced back at Laura Mallory once and shook his head again, as if he couldn't believe that he had underestimated her so badly. The puzzled concern that plagued Preacher grew stronger during the afternoon, when he found the spot where the tracks of 7 or 8 horses with unshod hooves crossed those of the other 2 horses.
Looky here!
Uncle Dan pointed to the tracks. Despite his age, he had the second sharpest pair of eyes in the group, right behind Preacher.
'Twas Injun ponies left that side.
I reckon those must have been the survivors from the war party.
And now they're trailing that Englisher and his sister.
So Clyde and Laura Mallory are in danger from the Blackfoot all over again.
Pete Sanderson brought his horse up alongside those of Preacher and his uncle.
How do we know these Injuns are from the same bunch that raided the settlement?
Yeah, we don't. But having a Blackfoot war party of the size that one was roaming around would make all the other Injuns in the area lay low for a while. I think this is the same bunch, but we won't know for sure until we catch up to them.
Something else occurred to Preacher. He frowned as he considered the droppings left behind by the horses they were following. To his experienced eye, all the piles appeared to have been there about the same amount of time.
Hold on. Some ain't right.
Preacher swung down from the saddle, moving a little more awkwardly than usual because of his splinted left arm that was strapped to his side. He hunkered on his heels to study several deposits of horse droppings.
You seem mighty interested considering that's horse shit you're looking at, Preacher.
Preacher ignored the man. He scooped up some of the brown stuff from one pile and rubbed it between his fingers, testing its consistency. Then he lifted his fingers to his nose and took a good whiff.
You gone loco, Preacher?
Still ignoring Sanderson, Preacher wiped his hand on the grass and performed the same tests on several other piles, Then he cleaned his hand again and straightened.
I see what you're getting at. They was all left at the same time, right?
Well, near enough. All the horses stopped here to rest, both the shod horses and the engine ponies. That means we're chasing one bunch again, not following the Blackfoot while they follow Clyde Mallory and Miss Laura.
So you're saying the engine's already caught up to those folks and took them prisoner again?
That's the way it looks to me.
So things are right back to the way we thought they were when we left the settlement. It don't change nothing. We're still gonna track down those Blackfoot and kill them, ain't we?
That's the plan.
Colin Fairfax paced back and forth anxiously as he waited for Sherwood to return from the settlement. Fairfax's second-in-command had been gone longer than he had expected he would. Finally, though, Fairfax saw Sherwood striding across the grassy floor of the valley toward him.
What took you so damn long?
I didn't want to make anybody suspicious. How would it have looked if I'd gone in there, asked where Preacher was, and then rushed off again?
Never mind that. Just tell me what you found out. Is he still there?
Nope. He and a group of men rode out earlier today on the trail of the Blackfoot who survived the battle. The Injuns took a couple of prisoners with him, and Preacher wants to rescue him.
Yeah, he would. Do you know who the prisoners were?
An Englishman and his sister. Mallory, I think their names were. That ain't all. I spent some time with Jerome Hart. He's a talkative bastard.
What did he tell you?
Preacher's hurt. His left arm is busted. He's got a bum knee, and he was slashed all over with knives during the fighting. Got barked on the head with a rifle ball, too.
But he went after the Blackfoot anyway, even with all those injuries?
Damn right. From the way Hart was talking, wild horses couldn't have held Preacher back from chasing those Injuns.
Which way did the rescue party go?
Off towards the northeast. They picked up the trail at one of the burned-out cabins on the edge of the settlement. I know where it started and which direction it was going, so we should be able to find it, too. And as long as we stay on it, we'll be on Preacher's trail.
By the time night fell, the group Preacher and his companions were following had moved through the pass that led out of the long, lush valley and into more rugged territory beyond. The bunch that the rescue party was following didn't have that big of a lead, but they were still well ahead of the pursuit. The Preacher knew that he and the others from the settlement could not take a chance of losing the trail in the darkness.
Let's halt up here and make camp for the night.
Oh, God damn it.
I know, dog. You think you could follow that bunch just with your nose, and I reckon there's a good chance you're right. We can't afford to run the risk of losing a day or two, though.
You're talking to that dog like he can understand what you're saying.
Well, I think critters understand a lot more than we give them credit for. I know damn well the dog and horse understand what I'm saying part of the time. They done what I said and saved my bacon too many times for me to think any different.
I didn't mean no offense, Preacher.
You listen to Preacher, boy. Pay attention and learn everything you can from him, and you might just live a while.
It ain't like I'm a babe in the woods or something.
Pete, compared to Preacher, everybody this side of John Coulter is a babe in the woods.
Sanderson shut up after that. It was a cold camp, the men eating jerky and biscuits that they had brought with them from the settlement. Preacher set up a schedule for guard duty.
Dog and me are gonna do some scouting. We'll be back after a while, so don't shoot us by accident when we come in.
You want some company?
Nah, I'd rather you stay here, keep an eye on things.
The old-timer nodded in understanding. Next to Preacher, he was the most experienced man in the group.
Moan, dog.
They set out on their scouting mission, vanishing into the shadows around the camp as if they had never even been there. Preacher's arm hurt like one son of a bitch, but he could tell that it was just sore. The long day's ride hadn't done any more damage to it. And being out in the night like this, just him and Dog flitting through the darkness like phantoms, well, that revitalized him, made him feel better. With eyes like a cat's, he had always been at home in the dark. The chances of anybody spotting him before he spotted them were very slim.
Trail, Dog.
The low-voiced command sent the big cur leaping ahead, nose held close to the ground. With his keen sense of smell, the scents of the people and horses they had been following all day were as distinctive as giant painted signs would have been to humans. Preacher loped after him, confident the dog would not lose the trail. jarring of his footsteps made his left arm ache a little more, but he ignored the pain. For the next hour, Dog kept moving steadily eastward. Preacher could tell the direction by the position of the stars that floated overhead in the ebony sky. Then their path began to curve in a more southeasterly direction.
Hold on there, Dog.
Big Dog came to a halt, but he seemed to strain forward against an invisible leash. After having been on the scent for so long, he didn't want to stop now.
Hang on a minute. Let me think.
As long as the Blackfoot had been heading in a generally northward direction, they had been moving back toward their usual hunting grounds. Preacher wasn't surprised by the drift to the east they'd been taking. But for them to turn south struck Preacher as odd. If they continued in that direction for many days, they'd be getting into country that was controlled primarily by the Cheyenne and the Pawnee. The savage Blackfoot weren't scared of the other tribes, Preacher knew that. But at the same time, it did not seem likely to him that they would venture into the territory of their enemies without a good damn reason.
What in the blazes are you varmints up to? Go, Dog.
Once again, the big cur took off, hot on the scent. Time meant little or nothing to Preacher in a situation such as this. He had the scent just like Dog, at least figuratively speaking, and he didn't want to give it up either. For the next hour, man and Dog moved steadily through the rugged terrain. Over rocky ridges, down long valleys, across shallow, fast-flowing creeks. With their usual arrogance, the Blackfoot weren't worried about anybody following them. Even though their raid had been a failure, and the war party was only a shadow of what it had been when it started out, they still had absolute confidence in their own fierce fighting skills. Preacher wasn't sure what time it was, but he knew he and Dog had been gone longer than he'd intended to be when he left the others in camp. He was about to tell Dog to stop so they could turn around and go back, when an almost imperceptible pinpoint of light in the distance caught his attention.
Hold it, Dog.
Preacher stood there concentrating. The light winked out, then on again, and Preacher knew that it wasn't actually going out. Things were moving between him and it. People or horses or tree branches blowing in the wind, maybe all three. But it was a campfire, he was sure of that. Located about 3 miles away across a valley, just this side of a range of low hills. Preacher's instincts told him that Laura Mallory was over there, along with her brother Clyde. It was all Preacher could do not to head for the distant camp then and there. In fact, he considered it briefly, thinking that he could slip in and free Laura and Clyde and get them out of there before their injured captors even knew what was going on. But the more pragmatic side of Preacher's brain told him that the likelihood of such an attempt being successful was dangerously slim. These weren't white men he was dealing with, after all. They were seasoned Blackfoot warriors. If he'd just been on a killing mission, he might have been able to pull that off, because he wouldn't have to worry about anyone except himself. But he couldn't count on the Mallorys to be stealthy enough in their getaway. The slightest sound would be enough to alert the Blackfoot to the fact that something was wrong. Then Preacher would have to fight his way out with the two prisoners, and the odds were that all three of them would die then. So difficult though it was, he told himself to wait. He would have a better chance to free Laura and Clyde later when the men from the settlement were with him. He just hoped that nothing terrible happened to the captives between now and then.
Come on, Dog. I know I feel the same way myself, damn it. But we gotta use our brains and be smart about this. Catch up tomorrow or the next day, and then I expect you're gonna have your fill of fighting.
Reluctantly, Dog followed as Preacher headed back to the spot where he had left the others. Uncle Dan greeted him when he finally came into camp with Dog trailing at his heels.
Find anything interesting?
Yeah, I saw a light at the edge of some hills about 5 miles southeast of here.
Campfire of the folks we're looking for?
That's what I figure.
Southeast of here, you say?
Yeah, that's right.
Sort of odd, ain't it? That ain't the way I expect a bunch of Blackfoot to be heading with some prisoners.
Yeah, same thought occurred to me.
Pete Sanderson came up to listen to the conversation.
What's odd about it?
It appears those Indians ain't heading home after all. If they keep going that way, they'll leave their stomping grounds behind and risk running into some Cheyenne or Pawnee.
We need to catch up to them before that can happen. Bad enough that we have to try to rescue Laura and her brother from the Blackfoot. I don't want to throw the Cheyenne into the mix, too. They might not be quite as bloodthirsty as a Blackfoot, but they're damn sure plenty dangerous. So I hope you fellows got rested up whilst I was gone, because it's time to get ready to move out now.
You mean we're going after them tonight? I thought you didn't want to risk losing the trail in the dark.
I don't, but there's not much chance of that now. Dog never lost a scent, and I saw where that campfire is. I reckon we can make up half the distance by morning, so we'll have an honest chance of catching them tomorrow.
Yeah, but, well, what if the fire you saw ain't the Blackfoot camp? What if you wind up leading us in the wrong direction?
Damn it, boy!
No, now, Pete ain't asking anything I ain't already asked myself. All I can say is that I'd stake my life I'm right. Problem is, it ain't just my life I'm betting. It's Laura Mallory's and her brother's life. And if I'm wrong, they'll likely die. Knowing that, is there anybody who doesn't want to come with me?
I reckon if you're backing the bet, Preacher, then we'll take it too.
Good enough. Everybody get your gear together. We got some ground to cover before morning.
Ezra Flagg made no reference the next morning to what had happened the night before. In fact, he didn't even look at Laura Mallory, which was fine with her. They still needed Flagg to deal with the Blackfoot. Laura suspected that if not for Flagg's presence, Chief Walks Like a Bear and the other warriors might just kill her and Clyde and be done with it. Flagg went over to Clyde.
We'll be getting to the edge of Blackfoot territory today. The chief and his men will want to turn back.
Yes, you warned us about that. Will the tribes that we encounter farther east be hostile to a small group? None of them bothered us while the wagon train was on its way out here.
Yeah, they'll leave a big, well-armed bunch alone for the most part. The Cheyenne and the Pawnee don't like whites any more than the Blackfoot do. We have to keep our eyes open. Our best bet is to try to catch up with those wagons of yours that are on their way back. If we can join up with them, we shouldn't have much trouble.
That's a splendid idea. We'll be able to travel considerably faster than the wagons, so it shouldn't take too long.
Once they had eaten breakfast, the group mounted up and headed into a range of low hills that ran north and south. Flagg seemed to know the country and led them along a trail that twisted back and forth through the valleys.
Do you think we'll ever go home, Clyde?
Our home was lost to us a long time ago, darling.
No, I didn't mean the place where we grew up. I was talking about England in general.
I suppose we'll probably return there at some point. If the savages had managed to wipe out those Americans, I thought we might make our home there once an English settlement was established. That may still come about. It will, if I have anything to say about it. We'll simply have to come up with another plan to drive them out. Perhaps our ally in St. Louis will have some suggestions along those lines.
This was not the first time Laura had heard her brother mention some mysterious ally in St. Louis. She knew that someone in the city had helped him put his hands on the guns that ultimately had gone to Chief Walks Like a Bear and the other Blackfoot warriors. She reflected bitterly that most of those guns were now lost, along with the warriors themselves, a wasted effort all around. They had done some damage to the Americans, but not nearly enough. Clyde was right, though. They couldn't give up just because of this one setback, terrible though it was. They would devise some other plan to drive the Americans out of the western half of the continent. And once that had been accomplished, the British could sweep down from Canada. Gradually, the Americans would be pushed back, and their expansionist dreams stymied. The time would come sooner or later when the so-called United States would once again be part of the British Empire, just as God had intended all along. Laura was sure of it. As they topped a rise around the middle of the day, Laura peered over several more ridges and saw the end of the hills and the beginning of the vast expanse of prairie in the distance to the east. The Great American Desert, some people call it.
There are the plains. We should be able to catch up to the wagons in a day or two.
If we don't run into any trouble, the chief and his boys will be turning back when we get to the edge of these hills. We'll be on our own then.
A shiver went through Laura. Once it was just her and Clyde and Flagg out there on those endless plains, what would Flagg do then? If anything happened to Clyde, she would be at his mercy. Preacher saw the sun glint off something in the distance, maybe a mile ahead of him and his companions. Uncle Dan saw it, too.
Reckon that'd be them.
Yeah, more than likely. Probably the sun shining on the fittings of one of those new goddamn rifles.
Where do you reckon the Injuns got all them new rifles? It ain't like Redskins to be so well armed.
That's one thing I intend on trying to find out when I get the chance. Right now, it's more important to rescue those prisoners, though.
Oh, I ain't arguing that. But it's right worrisome to think that somebody's supplying the Injuns with new rifles. It'd sure make things a heap riskier out here if all the savages got their hands on spanking new flintlocks like that.
The group forged ahead through the hills. Preacher led the way and used all the skills at his command to keep them from being spotted, while at the same time not losing sight of their quarry. That was a tricky task, but Preacher was up to it.
They'll reach the prairie by early this afternoon. If they get there before we catch up to them, ain't no way in hell we'll be able to sneak up on them after that.
We'll just have to catch them before they get there.
The sun rose higher and heated the air. Preacher's broken arm throbbed, and so did his head. He was capable of pushing himself to great lengths, but even he had his limits. He couldn't give in to the pain, not while Laura was being held prisoner. Assuming, of course, that she was even still alive. He didn't know that for sure. They hadn't come across her body. He was confident they were still on the right trail. The way Dog kept going without hesitation told them that. Preacher was careful not to let them be skylighted on the hilltops. But even so, they were high enough from time to time for him to be able to see the plains in the distance. Within an hour or so, they'd be closing in on their quarry. Then Preacher would have to decide just how he was going to get Laura and Mallory away from Blackfoot without getting killed in the process.